So one of the main implications of the progress made in string theory around 95 due to string dualities was the offering of a new framework for particle physics, which is alternative to the heterotic one. And it is based on the main ingredient is the dissociation of the string scale from the scale of quantum gravity, and has two main applications. The first is the brain world description of the universe, and the second is the possibility that strings may be observed someday in accelerators, which of course would be a very exciting possibility. Moreover, there is an additional physical motivation which comes from the protection of the Gates hierarchy as an alternative to supersymmetry if the string scale is of the order of a few TeV. So my talk will be the following. Mainly, the main part I will review the main results obtained in the realization of these ideas using deep brains in the context of type 1 string theory, which provides a consistent perturbative framework for low-scale string models. And I will, in particular, discuss the problem of Gates hierarchy, supersymmetry breaking, gate symmetry breaking, and saddle model embedding in this framework. And then the second part, which will be towards the end of my talk, I will discuss an alternative approach using NS5 brains in the context of type 2 theory, which provides an alternative framework in the context of little string theory, which can also define a consistent perturbation theory based on the double scaling limit. So maybe I'll put this in the other. So we'll start with type 1 theory, in which gauge interactions are confined to live on deep brains and are described by excitations of open strings, while gravity is described by closed strings which live in the bulk. So in the generic case, the standard model or any gauge group factor of the standard model lives on the world volume of some P brain, which has therefore P minus 3 compact directions along the world volume of the brain, and 9 minus P compact also directions transverse to it. Imposing the weak coupling for the type 1 theory restricts the size of longitudinal dimensions to be of the order of the string scale, while there are no constraints for the transverse dimensions. So in the simplest case, where all the transverse dimensions have the same radius, r, one obtains this straightforward relation between the Planck scale and the string scale in terms of the compactification volume of the transverse space. And this relation allows the string scale to dissociate from the Planck scale by a plane with the volume of the transverse dimensions. And keeping two main properties, the first keeping the string theory perturbative, so the string coupling is of the order, is given in this context by the Gates coupling square. And on the other hand, the gravity becomes strong at energies of the order of the string scale, which can be understood either by summing over the Kaluza-Klein excitations of the graviton or along the transverse dimensions, or by just analyzing this simple relation, which is nothing else than the Gauss law of the higher dimensional gravity. This combination is nothing else than the Planck's mass of the 4 plus n dimensional theory. So this allows the string scale to be at the at the order of the TeV for more than two extra dimensions, whose size must vary between the millimeter and the Fermi if there are six, from two up to six large dimensions. So the first question that one should ask in these models is the question of Gauss hierarchy, which in this context is the question why the Planck scale is much different than the electroweak scale is translated into the question why the, under what conditions you can find string vacuum in which there are dimensions, transverse dimensions, which are much larger than the string size. Depending how many extra dimensions you introduce, one has to explain a ratio which varies from the usual hierarchy for n equal to 10 to the 15 up to a large number, 10 to the 5, when there are six extra dimensions. Now, this problem has two aspects. The first aspect is a technical one, which is namely the stability of a non-supersymmetric string vacuum if I choose by hand some dimensions to be bigger than the string scale. In other words, to check that this choice is not destabilized by large corrections to the standard model couplings which live on the brain due to the fact that there are large extra dimensions. In other words, to verify that the effective cutoff in the effective field theory is given by the string scale and not by the four-dimensional Planck scale, or if you want, that there exists a decoupling limit, the limit where the size of the extra dimension goes to infinity. Now, there is an obstruction in this decoupling limit. If there are massless bulk fields that propagate in less than two large transverse dimensions, and this can be understood as either as an ultraviolet divergence of open strings which circulate inside the loop of any amplitude on the brain, or as an infrared divergence due to the emission of a massless closed string in the bulk, which goes into another brain or to another orientiform. So this divergence can be analyzed much simpler in this approach, seeing it as an infrared divergence. And in fact, if there is one large in the case of one large dimension, that there are in the case that there are bulk fields that propagate in one-dimensional space, since the propagator grows linearly, one obtains infrared linear divergences which grow like the radius, like the size of the extra dimension. And in the case of D transverse equal 1, if you put the string units, you find that this linear divergence is translated into a quadratic ultraviolet divergence proportion to the Planck mass square from the brain point of view. So the condition that of the stability of the hierarchy is that there is no bulk propagation in one large dimension. Or else, one should ask a local tadpole cancellation, which can be done, but it imposes severe constraints for model building. For more than two extra dimensions, there are no divergences. For exactly equal to two, there are logarithmic divergences, which are interesting, because they look like the situation in renormalizable field theory. On the one hand, these logarithmic divergences can be absorbed into a finite number of parameters, which are the values of the bulk massless fields evaluated at the position of the brain. And this is similar to renormalizable field theory. And in fact, one can replace the renormalization group with summation by the classical two-dimensional equations of motion in the transverse space. Why classical? Because fields depend logarithmically, and therefore the higher derivatives are irrelevant. Moreover, this case is interesting because it gives a possibility to solve the, really the hierarchy, the dynamical aspect, by minimizing an effective potential which depends logarithmically on the size of extra dimensions. And in fact, in the literature, there have been toy examples which can give, can provide large hierarchy based on the two-dimensional transverse space. So the conclusion is that non-supersymmetric strings with TV tension, they provide the same protection of hierarchy as softly broken supersymmetry at the TV, and therefore it is a viable alternative to supersymmetry that can be studied. Now, there is what I said up to now concerns amplitudes which live on the brain. So the stability of the hierarchy, if you want, of the mass of the Higgs, which corresponds to an open string amplitude. Now, if you look at not on open string amplitudes, but on closed string amplitudes, then there may be a new source of divergences, like, for instance, the cosmological constant, which receives contribution not only from brain, not only from open strings, but also from closed strings. And the contribution to the cosmological constant from the bulk behaves in a non-supersymmetric theory, in general, like the string scale to the 4 plus n power, if there are n extra transverse dimensions, which means that this cosmological constant is translated into a vacuum energy on the brain, which is enhanced by the volume of the transverse space. And in four-dimensional parameters, this combination is nothing else than a quadratic divergence, which is proportional to the four-dimensional Planck scale, Planck mass square, times the string scale square. This contribution is, in fact, is an analog of the quadratic divergence to the cosmological constant, which also exists generically in softly broken supersymmetric theories, where the string scale is replaced by the supersymmetry breaking scale. Now, in supersymmetric theories, I don't know any case, any symmetry, which can forbid the absence of these divergences to the cosmological constant. Here, there is a possibility to get rid of this quadratic sensitivity by asking that the brain, that although the brain is not supersymmetric, the bulk is supersymmetric to lowest order, and therefore supersymmetry will be will be transmitted to the bulk, but it will give rise to, will be suppressed by the volume of the bulk. So in that case, if supersymmetry is broken primordially only on the brain, which then one can guarantee the absence of the quadratic divergences in the cosmological constant. And in fact, as I will discuss in the following, there is an explicit realization of this possibility in the context of type 1 theory by models which realize this brain supersymmetry breaking. So if supersymmetry, it may be that the supersymmetry is not observed in our world because it happens that we live in some non-supersymmetric brain, but it may exist a millimeter away in the bulk if the bulk is supersymmetric. Such a possibility offers also a prediction as a possible new forces, may act as a source of possible new sources at sub-millimeter scales, which may be measurable in experiments which test gravity at short distances, if there are light scalars in the bulk. For instance, the modulus, which corresponds to the size of the transverse space, is such a scalar, which obtains a mass which is proportional to the string scale square, so TV square over M Planck, and therefore it corresponds to wavelengths of millimeter. And moreover, the coupling of this scalar to matter or to nucleons is given by the derivative, the variation of the couplings, for instance, of the QCD coupling. So this coupling can be of order one in models with logarithmic sensitivity to the size of extra dimensions, in which case you obtain forces which are comparable to gravity and which have wavelengths in the, millimeter, and therefore they can be tested experimentally. In fact, there is a series of experiments recently which test gravity at short distances, and this is the situation. This region is the excluded region up to now. This axis is the force relative to gravity, and this is the wavelength. And the red curve is due to a new experiment in Washington, which excluded the forces of the order of gravity at wavelengths of 200 microns. And the dust curve will correspond to the improvement in the next year or so of these experiments. So now we'll discuss a bit more closely the models with brain supersymmetry breaking in type 1 theory. So these models consist of implement stable non-BPS configurations of brains anti-brains or brains anti-orientifolds in type 1 string theory. So I write here the Ramon-Ramon charges and the tensions of by normalizing the charge of a D brain to plus one with a positive tension. Then an anti-D brain has Ramon-Ramon charge opposite but positive tension. Usual orientifolds have opposite Ramon-Ramon charges and negative tensions. While there may exist also orientifolds which have charges and positive tension and charges positive or negative, such as D brains. So in order to have brain supersymmetry breaking, one must have configurations of the type brain and D brain or brain with orientifold bar or anti-brain with orientifold planes of this sort, which have always the property that the Ramon-Ramon charge is canceled, but the tension is added. In the combinations of the form brain anti-orientifold, there is no tachyon, because this means simply that the difference comes from the supersymmetry breaking comes from the projection of the open string, or if you want, from the Mobius amplitude. While supersymmetry, while it may appear, you may have tachyon if you have brains and the brains of the same type. Now, the tachyons can be avoided in this case if the brain and the brain are of different type. For instance, if you combine D9 with anti-D5, or if one puts the brains in different positions in the transverse space. So the simplest model of this sort is can be made already in 10 dimensions. It's due to Tsujimoto, and consists of inverting the omega projection due to the Wolf-Schmidt evolution from conventional, let's say, plus one, which is which gives a supersymmetric SO32 theory, in which case the open strings anti-symmetrize the Chan pattern indices and you obtain an SO32 gauge group. If I change the omega projection from plus one to minus one, then one introduces from orientifold minus orientifold plus planes, which have opposite Ramon-Ramon charge and opposite tension, and therefore one has to introduce anti D9 brains, in which case the omega projection symmetrizes the Chan pattern indices in the bosons, while anti-symmetrizes fermions. And you can obtain a 10-dimensional theory based on the SP32 gauge group, but with fermions in the anti-symmetric representation. So this is the simplest case in which supersymmetry is broken on the brain due to a combination of anti-D brains with Orientiful plus planes. Now, in this case, of course, it's a choice from the beginning. This change of the omega projection is due to the sign ambiguity, if you want, in the Mobius amplitude, technically. However, there are cases in lower dimensions in which the breaking of supersymmetry comes as a necessity. There is no such a choice, which is, for instance, the case, the first non-trivial example is if you take a T4 over Z2 orbifold, and we invert the omega projection in the twisted sector from plus 1 to minus 1. Then, in the case of plus 1, you obtain the usual T4 over Z2 orientifold with 16D9 brains and 16D5 brains. If you change it from plus 1 to minus 1, then there is no other solution, supersymmetric solution, in the tadpole cancellation. But the theory forces to introduce anti-D5 brains, in which case supersymmetry is broken by consistency of the theory. So in this case, the tadpole conditions is that fixes the difference of the number of D9 minus anti-D9 to 16, and the difference of D5 minus the anti-D5 to 16 times epsilon, and epsilon is plus 1 for the supersymmetric case, minus 1 for the non-supersymmetric. You see, for the non-supersymmetric, I have to introduce anti-D brains, and supersymmetry is necessarily broken. Now, in such a theory, you obtain a three-level potential, which receives, in general, two contributions. One from the D9 brains, which grows like the square root of the volume, and another one from the D5 brains, which behaves like 1 over the square root of the volume of the T4. And therefore, this potential has a non-trivial minimum with respect to the volume of the transverse space, and which is fixed as the ratio of the anti-D5 to the anti-D9 brains. Now, of course, at the minimum of the potential, the value of the potential is not zero, and is run away with respect to the dilaton. That's the usual runaway dilaton problem for which I have nothing new to say. In fact, there are some models in which you can find the minimum at zero, but then the problem, of course, will appear at one loop. Another property of these models is that at the one loop level, one can also fix the Wilson lines, or if you want, the separation of brains, which, at the three level on the disk, have a zero potential. They do not appear in the potential, but at the one loop, they will appear in the potential. So there is a non-trivial potential for these Wilson lines, and the minimization of the one loop potential can fix the separation of the brains, and therefore the gauge group. So, for instance, a non-trivial example is based again in the same model, the T4 over Z2. So let's take the simplest case in which all the anti-D5, we have only 16 anti-D5 brains, we choose epsilon to be minus 1, and 16 D9 brains. Then when all the anti-D5 brains are placed at the origin, the gauge group is SP16 cross SP16, while the fermions are in the antisymmetric representation, so supersymmetry is broken on the whole volume of anti-D5 brains, while there are scalars and fermions in the 16-16 representation. So one can write the potential of these scalars, of which belong to the 16-16 representation. These scalars at the tree level is determined by truncation of is the same with the three-level scalar potential that obtains in a supersymmetric theory, where these scalars belong to hypermultiplets, and the potential is given by the D-term square. So there are flat directions. But now, because the theory is not supersymmetric, supersymmetry is broken, at the one loop, you will obtain a potential for this, which will lift these flat directions. So if I keep, for instance, one radius, the potential can be computed explicitly. It's given by this one loop integral. And it is oscillatory in the Wilson line, or in the brain separation. And one sees that if I put all the origin here corresponds to A equals 0, and which is an extremum, but this extremum is maximum because the second derivative of the potential is negative, while there is another point, A equal 1/4, which corresponds to displace the brains into the middle of the compactification interval, which is stable. And at this point, the gauge group is broken to the diagonal SP16. Now, in a realistic model which has in four dimensions, in which one applies further orbifold projections to obtain chirality, in general, these Wilson lines are projected away, but the computation that we made will remain valid for the charge components. And this can give a framework for the standard model Higgs. If I identify the standard model Higgs with the charge components of these scalars, in which case one can realize a radiative gauge symmetry breaking of the standard model gauge group, in which the minimum is not of order one in terms of the string scale, but it is but it has a loop factor suppression. So if you want, in this case, the potential has for the Higgs, let's say, will be determined at the tree level, the quartic term, by the supersymmetric D terms, while the mass will appear at one loop, like in that case, but it will be negative because as we saw, at the origin, the potential was unstable. It was a maximum. And as a consequence, this can give a radiative breaking, which has two main consequences. The first is that you get the same prediction for the Higgs mass as in the supersymmetric case, because essentially the coupling, the quartic coupling is given by the supersymmetric D terms. And moreover, obtains a hierarchy between the string scale and the scale of breaking of the gauge symmetry by this factor epsilon, which can be estimated by the previous computation. So just by evaluating the potential at the origin, one finds that this epsilon is 1 to 2 orders of magnitude less than 1. And therefore, one can this provides a possible framework for radiative symmetry, gauge symmetry breaking. So I would like now to discuss in this context some possible embedding of the standard model in the context of deep brains. So the idea is simple. We'll consider every unitary factor of the standard model that arises from some set of coincident deep brains, in which case you obtain, in addition to the SUN factor, a U1, which acts like a baryon number, which is gauged, because it's a gauge symmetry. So the minimal choice is that you have three factors of three sets of D brains, which correspond to the U3, to the color, to the QCD part, to the weak SU2 part, and to the U1. One may ask the question if this U1 is needed. In principle, the U1 hypercharge could be made as a linear combination of the baryon number and of this U1 corresponding to the, let's say, to the weak doublet number. It turns out that such a case is impossible because the hypercharge cannot be made by such a linear combination. So one needs to introduce an additional U1. And therefore, in general, there are three different couplings corresponding to the three sets of brains. However, one may examine the possibility in which case this U1 brain is sitting together with the U3 or together with the U2, in which case one obtains a relation among the couplings, and one can check if this relation can be made consistent for a string scale at the at EV energies. So first of all, it's a simple exercise to accommodate all the members of the quark and lepton family as open strings which are stretched among the various types of the three types of brains, or between of such a brain and the bulk and a different type of brain. By doing a general ansatz about the quantum numbers and fixing and asking that the hypercharge is a linear combination of the three U1s, one finds four possibilities for the charge assignments. And for every possibility, one can compute the sine square theta as a function of the three couplings. Now, if I put all the couplings to be the same, the three couplings to be the same, then you find that the value of the sine square theta is not a conventional one, it's not 3 over 8, but you obtain different values. So we'll study the possibility. In fact, we will not impose unification, but you can impose just, as I mentioned before, to choose the U1 brain to be on top of the SU2 or on top of the SU3 brain, and analyze if this possibility can be made consistently. So I can compute the sine square theta in the two cases, in the case where the U1 is sitting with the SU3 or the U1 is sitting with the SU2 brain, and compare it with the experimental value. And in fact, one finds that this possibility can be realized consistently. And in fact, in the case where the U1 is sitting with the color brains, then one can this possibility can be made consistently with a string scale of the order of a few TeV. So that's a simple example which shows that this model building can be made in the context of deep brains and without requiring grand unification. So that is this is the choice of the quantum numbers in the case that I mentioned, where the U1 is together with the U3. Then one can ask what are the type of Higgses that one can add. There are two possible choices for the Higgs, and in fact one needs both choices in order to give masses to all quark and leptons of of the third generation. So the final comment is that we identified the hypercharge as a linear combination of the three U1s. They remain in two U1s. One can check that they are anomalous. They are mixed anomalies with gauge anomalies with the SU3 and the SU2. So these anomalies in a consistent theory should be cancelled by the Green-Schwarz mechanism by shifting two axions, which come in these models from the Ramon-Amon sector. And in this way, these two U1s become massive, and they give rise to global perturbative symmetries, one of which is the baryon number, which guarantees proton stability. So that's a simple example which concludes which realizes in simple terms. Which gives a framework for embedding of the standard model, and which can realize the ideas of lowering the string scale in explicit string constructions. So I would like now to discuss the second possibility of realizing low scale models playing with NS5 brains in the context of type 2 string theories. Thank you. In this case, then the standard model should be made should be embedded on a set of NS5 brains, which are transverse to four dimensions, and one has to introduce the two dimensions of the five along the five brain are compact. Then, in the relation between the Planck scale and the string scale, in addition to the volume of the transverse space, it appears explicitly the string coupling, which was not the case for deep brains. And this gives a new possibility for dissociating the value of the Planck mass from the value of the string scale by playing with a string coupling instead of a large volume. So we can choose all the radii of the transverse and longitudinal to be of the order of the string scale and introduce a tiny string coupling of the order of 10 to the minus 14, 10 to the minus 16 to explain the hierarchy. There are two main differences compared to the previous models, to the deep brain models. The first is that the gravity does not become strong at the TEV because gravitational interactions as well as string interactions are suppressed by the small string coupling. And the second is that there exist always two dimensions longitudinal to the brain with gauge interactions, and these are characteristic. The Kaluza-Klein along these dimensions are characteristic to these models. Now, since the string coupling goes to zero, in fact, these theories can be studied, and they give rise to a first they can be formulated in this limit as little string theories, because I can take the limit where the gravity decouples, since in these models gravity remains weak at the string scale. And these models have two sectors. The first sector contains the gauge interactions, which are confined on NS5 brains. And the gauge couplings in this case are not given by the string coupling, but are given are determined by the geometric moduli of the along the two dimensions or compact dimensions of the NS5 brains. So in the type 2B is determined by the area of the let's say T2, while in the type 2A is determined by the complex structure of T2. And one has to distinguish these two possibilities. In type 2B, the gauge degrees of freedom corresponds to point particles, to zero brains, which are the endpoints of these strings, which are stretched between the NS5 brains, and which have a tension, which is given by the tension of the D string times the separation of the brain. And this is what, in the limit where the string coupling goes to zero, the D brain tension goes to infinity, the separation goes to zero, and their product should be identified, for instance, with a W mass. While in type 2A, instead of D strings, one has D2 brains, which are stretched between the NS5 brains, and therefore the charge excitations correspond now to charge strings, which are the end lines of these D2 brains. And their tension is given, for instance, is given by the mass of the by the product of the tension of the D2 brain times their separation. And this string has to be wrapped around one dimension to give rise, for instance, to the W. So the tension of the charge string is the mass of the W divided by the radius, which can be obtained just by T-duality from type 2B to type 2A along R1. So this is the charge part, which comes non-perturbatively from and then there is the neutral pact, the neutral sector, which corresponds to neutral closed little strings, which are trapped in the vicinity of five brains and which remain in this double scaling limit in which the string coupling goes to zero and the separation of the NS5 brains goes to zero. In this double scaling limit, one can define a perturbation theory using a coupling, which is the ratio of the string coupling divided by the separation in the string units, and which is divided, which is given by the inverse MW or the inverse tension in string units in the type 2B or in type 2A. So one can ask the question under which condition the coupling of little strings can be made less than one, and one can define a consistent perturbation theory. This can be realized on the type 2A if the string tension or the charge of the charge string is bigger than the string scale. So in this case, the little strings will be the first signal of the new physics because the first scale which appears corresponds to the string scale, which is the scale of little strings. So just to finish, I would like to make a few comments related to this approach, differences compared to the deep brain models. The first is concerning the stability of the hierarchy. Here is automatic because the string, once you choose the string scale to be at the TEV, since the hierarchy is determined by the is controlled by the string coupling. The second one can ask under what condition one can find models in which one can fix the string coupling in such small value. I mean, usually, you know, even in the deep brain models that I discussed previously, one has always the runaway dilaton problem. In this context, the dilaton runaway problem is related to the hierarchy because one wants to fix the dilaton usually tends to go to zero, and here we would like to find a mechanism in which the dilaton is stabilized in a very small value. One possibility that can, in order to fix to find a minimum in which the string coupling is very small, one needs to have logarithms in the effective potential. These logarithms can arise if there are masses, heavy masses, which depend, perturbative masses, which depend on the string coupling. And this can happen if the theory has an anomalous U1, which has a gauge coupling, which depends on the string coupling. Now, in these models, since the standard model arises from NS5 brains, the gauge coupling does not depend on the string coupling. So one has to introduce a new sector, a hidden sector, let's say, from D brain, which has an anomalous U1, in which case the mass of this, there are masses which are proportional to the to the gauge coupling, which depends on the string coupling, and the logarithmic corrections by integrating out these states, logarithms of the of these masses can give rise to logarithms of the string coupling, and therefore one can imagine in principle this can give in principle a possibility to fix the dilaton at a very small value. Another comment is that the dilaton coupling to matter in these cases is ultra weak because there is an additional suppression due to the string coupling. Therefore, it's second order, if you want, in the gravitational coupling, which means that there is no experimental constraint on its mass, and even the massless case is in principle allowed. And finally, one can think about the cosmological constant, which is now controlled by the string coupling, which is very small. So if there are models in which one can vanish the cosmological constant up to two loops, like the models that have been suggested by Kahlo Silverstein in the past in the context of type 2 theories, this can give a sufficient suppression of the cosmological constant, which can arise now in three loops and which is sufficiently small to be less than the experimental value. Sorry, it took a few minutes more. So I'll finish.
Many of the models that you exhibited for brain supersymmetry breaking will exhibit a catastrophic non-perturbative instability due to the bounce instantons with one negative eigenvalue. Shouldn't you impose the absence of this instability as an extra condition in model building?
You mean the instability from the potential? I didn't say.
Instability similar to the Kautz-Klein instability studied by Witten. Due to the Euclidean Schwarzschild black hole solution. So there are instantons with one negative eigenvalue typically in all these, on most of these brain supersymmetry breaking models. So the quantum mechanics is not really consistent. So I'm curious whether we should impose that as an extra condition.
Due to non-perturbative, you mean? Non-perturbative condition? Because from the point of view of perturbative type 1 theory, I mean, you have these models are equally consistent as the supersymmetric models, apart from the problem, of course, of the generating of the potential that this is generic to any non-supersymmetric model.
Right,
I mean, once you construct non-supersymmetric models, you have to generate a cosmological constant. So
but non-perturbatively, they are not that different from models with tachyons because the tachyon.
No, there are models in which there are no tachyons at all. For instance, this right. T4 over Z2 with anti-D5 brains and 9 brains, there are no they do not contain any tachyons.
But they contain instantons with a negative eigenvalue that.
At strong coupling, not at weak coupling.
Maybe we can discuss this later.
Yeah. Any questions? Okay, if not, let's thank the speaker again.